The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 14 after 8 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, Diana Anderson rejoins the program. Diana Anderson, local researcher, local author, too, has written on all sorts of bad stuff that the leftists that control Oregon wish to continue to move forward with. And now you're thinking, Bill, Trump won. Yeah, not much changed in Oregon, but Trump won. And I said, yeah, that's exactly my point, that Trump won. But Trump is not going to save us from communism here in the state of Oregon. In fact, if anything, our work is even, I shouldn't say, I don't know if it's more difficult, but, well, it could be more difficult in one respect here, Diana Anderson, because the, many Republicans or conservatives, people that want something different here, oh, Trump won. It's okay. He's going to save us here.
And they might pull back from what they're doing.
Yeah, they might pull back. Yeah. That's not going to happen, though, is it?
I hope not, you know.
Well, no, they're not going to pull back. I'm saying that the forces that are trying to remake Oregon are not going to be smacked down because President Trump's in the Oval Office.
No, they might cry in their bedroom a little bit, but other than that, they have the forces and the powers that came into the state of Oregon to do this have been long, decades long in coming, and they have brought a... Well, you might call it a conspiracy. This more than 100 years ago in the planning stages, like Clarence Perry's iconic neighborhood unit depiction of what a good climate-friendly area should look like, or a 20-minute neighborhood in a 15-minute city. And it's...
All about sustainable development.
Right.
You will be here, and you're going to be in your affordable housing.
Yeah.
And I asked, I think I asked Brad Bennington, you know, formerly of the Builders Association yesterday, said, and I asked him, and I think this may be where we key off our conversation here, Diana, is there a possibility the real conspiracy here that we're looking at is the bringing in of affordable housing because it changes the demographic to a pliable, the climate-friendly, equitable, you will own nothing and be happy. In fact, I just got hit up by someone doing a stat that said more than half of the housing in Medford now is multifamily.
Multifamily.
Yeah.
Multi-mix. Mixed use.
52%. And to me, that is going to be a progressive welfare-sucking class of individuals that they will wish that will be very pliable and will be very friendly because they're thinking, well, I don't really own anything. I have no skin in the game.
Right.
So give me my services.
Right. It's intended to be, for the future, densely populated neighborhoods in the name of egalitarian social justice, in fact. So you have a mixed use of people who have different incomes in the same neighborhood. So, and you have
rather
to go
than the
to
way
like
our
a,
neighbor, rather than the way our neighborhoods are right now, in which you have a lot of single family homes, in which people who own single family homes, I believe, live and vote and have a different view of government than those that are in stack and pack 15-minute cities.
15-minute cities, correct. You have to go some like the Green Building Council, the Congress for the New Urbanism, the American Planning Association. All these organizations have a lot of stake in the game for affordable housing. In fact, I can go to Moscow in the 1950s, and Alexei Gutinov, in the book that they put out at the university there, The Ideal Communist City was the name of the publication. And they gave an exact definition of what a new unit of settlement is. And that's the same as the neighborhood unit planning. And actually, it began in the United Kingdom. And they sent it out to the world. The Soviets picked it up first. Only they called it super block housing, not affordable housing. And then China liked it, too. So when the Congress of New Urbanism studied it a little bit, they sent out a 1992 study. And they conceded that affordable housing, they gave a history of it, and they conceded that since the Soviets and the Chinese had picked up on Clarence Perry's neighborhood unit planning, only they called it super blocks, that it was compatible with communism. The whole idea of redoing our landscape, creating these neighborhood units that have kind of their more individual economic system built mm-hmm. into the neighborhood planning later on, and that all, we trace that back to Marxist economy, too, right there. Marx even called them local intentional communities. He said that would be the last kind of component. That's you not only need to mentally construct communism in your mind for health and happiness, you have to reconstruct the landscape so that social order and then the physical space that you live in had to be affected also.
Diana, is this also why there has been such a push for, in various cities, especially cities that got smacked with the Alameda fire, which I'm sure, you know, once again, they never let a crisis go to waste. All of a sudden, we see the proliferation of what they call maker's marts and things like that. You know,
yes.
The maker movement.
The maker movement, yeah.
Yeah, in which we're going to, in our neighborhood, have, you know, people making things.
Right.
And even though it looks kind of nice and like, okay, I can get here. And then there's the food carts here and there's the maker mart here and this and that and the other. I can't help but think that it's conspiratorially part of this agenda. Am I right or wrong about that?
You're right about that.
I am. Okay. So it was a suspicion of mine. Okay.
Yeah. They call it by different names. So if you go to the WEF's Fourth Industrial Revolution, they'll have seven different categories of vocational ed. And so if you research down into some of those categories, you find that, there's those ideas to create community wealth, not individual wealth.
Community wealth, which is, of course, remember, communism, community, and you can't help but see they're talking a lot about community lately.
Yeah.
And our particular community thinks this.
That's why my tomorrow night when we do the Central Point slide presentation.
Which, by the way, will be
Neighborhood Commune.
Okay.
Because that's what it is.
This will be at the Central Point Library. Tomorrow, Friday, 6 o'clock. Okay?
6 o'clock. And it will be on Zoom, too. And I'm sorry I forgot the passcode and the key for that on Zoom. But I have a marvelous gal who has volunteered to do a lot of technical support for me.
How will they be able to find you on Zoom? Do you know?
They can go to my email if they want. I can give you my email.
Okay. What's that?
It's Lynn D. Anderson. At protonmail.com.
So that'll be the email to get in.
Yes.
In
uh-huh.
view
right.
of the Zoom, rather.
Right.
Okay. Well, why don't you give that to me, and I'll put it on the website after.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
But the Congress for the New Urbanism, after they stated that in a survey, what it gave for me is, I don't have to go to Soviet USSR in order to prove that any kind of neighborhood planning was suitable for communism. What surprised me is that those organizations that are actually in charge of putting together zero growth communities, they admit that it was compatible with communism.
Hold that thought here. We'll be right back. Okay. Diana Anderson joining me, putting on an event tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Central Point Library, on what we are discussing right now, the continuing creeping communism here, and our local planning departments, and they're all drinking from the same Kool-Aid of climate-friendly, equitable community. Now, some of this is a forcing issue, but we'll continue where it goes next.
The purchase of another gutter manufacturing machine has spurred speculation.
Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
News Talk 106.3 KMET. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Back with Diana Anderson. Diana Anderson with her slideshow presentation tomorrow in Central Point. 6 o'clock, you are invited to the Central Point Library event. And what is the basic topic again? You're going to be talking about the planners and how they're affecting us here?
Well, actually, I'm going to, of course, concentrate again on what neighborhood unit planning is, climate-friendly areas for people who are unfamiliar. I'm going to have quite a few.
15-minute cities, you will own nothing, you will be happy.
Right.
Medford is all in on this.
Yes. Medford's action plan actually includes all the Southern Oregon communities, from Grants Pass all the way down to Ashland. So I'll be providing maps for people to look at to with some proposed climate-friendly areas so they can see if they live near or on a climate-friendly area.
What is the role of the American Planning Association, planning.org,
okay,
in the infiltration of this into a formerly free society?
Well, actually, American Planning Association, their origins come from the United Kingdom. They have a global association. But they provided a guidebook for all the legislative houses in America in the art of growing smart.
Smart growth is another name for that.
Yeah, they put the first one out around 1997. And then the one I downloaded, a 1,432-page document that they put out in 2002, had seven or eight chapters. The first one was initiating planning statute reform, so they wanted to change the laws. Told them how to do that. They proposes the grant to power, how to plan all your agencies, how to organize new agencies, land development, biodiversity, economic development, and the big one was affordable housing.
And affordable housing is the mantra you're hearing incessantly in the state of Oregon.
Right. You can't hear the word housing without putting the word, knowing, oh, they got to be affordable now. But chapter 6 was on regional planning. Chapter 5 actually was state land use control.
And we're the only state that does that entirely.
Yes. And chapter 7 is the local planning. So they talked about neighborhood designation, community organizations, and the planning councils. And the Vision 2040 task force right now has listed the creation of neighborhood associations. And they will be the bottom tier of regional government that will make the decisions and give report to their next governing authority, which is probably Rogue Valley Council of Governments, and then they report to the next APIC council and on and on. So it creates a new metropolitan planning organizational system. So when APA gives a guide and tells our legislators how to change laws to reflect smart growth, to me, that's, the top 10 conspiracies, anti-constitutional means in order to change American.
To change America, totally. Kind of like when Obama was talking about, we're going to totally transform America.
Socially, economically, and your environment also. So everything that constitutes human survival, actually, will be contained within those circles within circles, I call them. They believe in systems theory. So everything has to be in a system. And this particular one that Vision 2040 is putting on the table is an ecosystem. You can even find images of ecosystems online. Go to Google Images and type in any of these. And ecosystem actually was a term, a phrase used in President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development, the PSCD, back in when he was president.
And sustainable development means you don't have your home or your farm. You don't do that kind of living any longer. Your single-family detached house is that's not a sustainable model in their view, is it?
Well, if you go to like the Monthly Review, which is an online Marxist publication, they talk about ecosystems. And along with that, right behind it is what they call degrowth. And World Economic Forum talks about degrowth. Like you said, you won't own anything, but you will be happy. So we can say a little, expressions like that and toss them up as, oh, that's just what they say. But when I read 1,400 pages or read any document publicized by these organizations, I have to take them for their word.
They're serious as a heart attack, Diana.
Yeah,
okay? And this is why, and I am thrilled that President Trump was elected president, okay?
Yes.
But my concern about this in the state of Oregon is that the conservative, constitutional, common sense people will go back asleep and go back to watching Fox and Newsmax and News Nation and thinking that that is all fixed because President Trump will be in there for 3 or 4 years. And what we're trying to make sure you understand is that nothing could be further from the truth here in the state of Oregon.
Right.
The West Coast states in general, especially, because we're kind of on the vanguard of this.
Washington, Oregon, California. I mean, they provide the demonstration of this for the whole world, actually.
Yeah, we're essentially the petri dish to move the communism ball forward, okay? Yeah. 832. Brad Bennington is here. Brad, it's good to have you on. You're with, I'm going to have to turn the microphone off so Diana can hear you, but you're with Diana Anderson. Go ahead.
Yeah, Diana, good morning. You and Bill are talking about stuff that's absolutely right on the money. Diana, you and I have talked about this before, but Diana, could you speak a little bit more about something that Bill just said, which is why Oregon is so important? Bill, what you said is that Oregon is the petri dish for this type of policy, and you are absolutely correct. We're this tiny little state with only 4 million people in it, but because there's only 4 million people, what the left has learned is that for very little money, they can use our state to work on these policies, on how to distribute the policies, on how to do the actualization. And the best example that we have of that is the 2020 election. Where did vote by mail come from? Vote by mail came from Oregon. That's where they honed it. That's where they put it all together. But this is just an example of why Oregon is so important. And these policy planning pieces that you and Diana are talking about, once they get this stuff tied up with a nice pink bow on top, they can be exporting it state by state across the rest of the country. Diana, can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, we sure will. And thank you for the call, Brad. Thank you for confirming what we thought we knew, too. All right?
Yes.
You be well.
Yeah. Oregon has always been the fine demonstration partner. There was a Demonstration Partnership Act in Title II of Educate America Act, and that was brought to Oregon by Vera Katz. She was mayor of Portland at the time and worked a lot with Carnegie. But the idea there was to bring about community learning centers, the clearinghouses, changing the way community education would fan out. And when you talk about education, it's not just at the school. It's not a red brick building anymore in their documents. They're talking about you need to learn how to be sustainable. They want you to be the contributor to it. You're the one that has to work at this with us. And in Oregon, was the first state to adopt the Goals 2000 or Educate America Act.
And is that also where the outdoor schools came from?
No. well, that came a little bit later, but that's part of it too.
All right.
And it was Al Gore that said Oregon was a petri dish for the world. Portland was the first city in the world to create a 20-minute neighborhood. At Portland State University, you have representatives of the United Nations Initiative. And there's only two of them. I think the other one's in Georgia. I for my kind of cloudy in that point. But Brad is correct. Oregon is not going to change just because Trump was elected. They are the demonstration state for the whole world. Wherever Oregon goes, the rest of the states will eventually go. That's why when I talk to people and family, even back east, in Iowa, they kind of look at me with like, my sister's losing it, kind of thing. But if you, the reality is going to hit when the Vision 2040 Task Force, starting in 2029, has an initiative that you will not be driving downtown. Well, I would hope I still have my car, and I'm going to get in my car, and I'm going to drive all the way through downtown Medford.
Now, this is part of Vision 2040 right now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so, no doubt, the planners, the they take grants in the city of Medford, and then, well, you know, we can turn these streets back after we destroy them with the bollards and the weird parking downtown.
Yeah,
we can do all this. And don't worry, it's just so that we could pave the streets. That's Bullstein, isn't it?
Right, right. It's another thing, too. I don't want people to think that this is just a new transportation going to transit, you know, bus-oriented. You know, like even at Safeway, you go into the parking lot and there's a sign there, thank you for rolling in. Mm-hmm. You roll in on roller skates if you want, you know, but it's the idea of rolling. I would like to think that people would understand that they are talking about accounting for all private and public daycare centers in Oregon. And I think Head Start, which is one of their contributors, direct contributors, they have an initiative for a universal child care system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is about, you know, this climate-friendly, equitable community, the sustainable development, whatever of the various names you want to put behind it, it is a complete reconfiguration of our area. And Southern Oregon is in the target. And not only is it in the target to redesign our cities, but it's also redesigning the electorate and political power structures.
Yes.
Because of that focus on you will own nothing and be happy. You'll be, well, gosh, you'll be able to, you know, live in your little stack and pack habit trail apartment in downtown Medford. And look, you won't need a car. You won't need this. In fact, you won't have to, you won't need anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll have you, you won't have your car. They have strategies in Chapter 660 of the ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes, that talk about demand management. I mean, they have a definition for the phrase demand management.
Well, demand management means you're not going to want to take
right.
it because it'll usually because it's too expensive, like what they're trying to do with the I-5 bridge up in Portland. You know,
right?
Yeah, we're not going to provide. We're not going to provide any more car or truck transportation. But oh, we have to spend billions so that we can do light rail that no one's driving or riding right now.
Right. I would think that in the future, these neighborhood associations that are going to be kind of hiring what they call docents in the Vision 2040 plan. In order to make sure that your community is livable, well, that livable means sustainable. So they need people to manage energy and water and waste and who's driving, who's not.
That almost sounds like the destruction of the Medford City Council style of government, really.
Oh, eventually it will.
Okay.
They're kind of digging their own hole right now.
This is what I want to get at here. So this event tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, you're continuing down. This is a rabbit hole, which is there.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the research, which you have compiled, of course. The thing is, though, where is the, you know, how do you fight communism when it is so embedded in state government at this point?
I believe one of the county commissioners stated, we need a mass movement to get rid of this because there are many of those sustainability laws that APA trained all the legislators to do was to pass laws. For instance, they have passed a law on how they're going to have a greater percentage of EVs or electronic vehicles purchased in Oregon. I mean, when you talk about a state wanting to control the purchasing power and what you buy, that's Marxist right there, to control the economy, control what's being produced,
what's being allowed to be purchased.
Yeah. And they say if they don't have 80% of EV vehicles on the road in 2050, they will have to go to other strategies in order to hit their target.
I'll give you an idea what that strategy might be. And this is one of the reasons why, just like the reason they wanted smart meters was not to save you money.
Right.
But was so that it could have demand management of power, right?
Right.
When you actually need the power doubles, triples, quadruples, or more, which is what happens in California right now, okay? What they would do with demand management for driving in downtown Medford, oh, it'll be a per mile charge to be downtown. You want to drive downtown? Maybe it's a $5 per mile charge, and then they manage to not have you go downtown anymore.
Right.
Could it be? I know that's kind of a blunt, right, a blunt force trauma instrument I'm talking about, but that's it, right? The demand management side of things?
Well, if we're doing smart growth, it's heading towards smart cities. So Oxford is kind of an example.
What we need is a well-functioning dumb city, okay? and maybe when I say dumb, I'm talking about a human city. Not an artificial intelligence, a world economic forum creation, which is what this climate-friendly, equitable community seems to sound like.
Well, what I showed and brought to the Vision 2040 Task Force meeting last month was the book by Doug Farr and Associates. And you don't even get past the preface of this large book, which actually guides them on how to get a net zero growth communities built. And they say, well, why are we building cities for fuel-efficient cars when we can build cities that don't need cars at all? You know, and when I said that, there was a lady in the room sitting along this side of Rogue Valley Transportation Office, and you could hear her gasp, you know, when I said that. But I told the task force, I said, well, if you want to know how to get to zero growth real quick and bypass all this other stuff you're doing, preliminaries, just use Doug's words right here. Because those are the people the Congress for New Urbanism was founded by six people in California.
Boy, talk about six people that are controlling millions now.
Oh, yeah. And the same way with the Green Building Council and two other councils, too, that are deep into our communities right now.
Everyone who is listening to us right now, Diana, should be incensed and offended.
Correct.
Offended and also offended at our city government laying down for this.
Right. They're the ones that actually participated with Jensen Strategies from Portland Consulting Agency, and 3J Consulting has been active for more than a year here in the Valley. But if we go back and look at when these codes were actually put on the book up in the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development, they go back to like 2022. I mean, that's just 2 years ago. They're really on a fast track to get this completed because they know they don't want the public to know exactly what the bottom line is.
This is why it's important to attend this meeting tomorrow, this presentation, if you've not studied up on this, because this is this is real. It's happening here, and Trump will have absolutely no effect on this. All right.
Right.
And that's the truth of the matter here. The war against us in Southern Oregon, especially because they want us changing politically.
Well, it's like when Lenin came into Petrograd, they didn't know in, you know, the Ural region that there was a communist government set up. And it's the same way here. I mean, we're being set up for a demonstration for the whole world.
Yeah. So tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Central Point Family Library, or Central Point Library, I should say. Thank you so much for this take on this.
Thank you so much for the time.
Leave me some information. I'll put up the Zoom link, too, on the Bill Maier Show blog today.
Okay. All right.
Diana Anderson, continuing with this conversation. You can talk with her after. There's a lot of Q&A and things like that going on, because this is real, and the design is to, and I know you might be thinking, oh, our local community leaders would not allow this to happen. They are. They're doing it right now. And a lot of it is because they feel like there is no choice, because under state land use planning, it's one of these things where if you don't do this climate-friendly, equitable community, you're not going to be allowed to grow. Okay? Well, maybe that's what we do.
Well, I don't want to degrowth either. So,
yeah,
you know.
And they want to degrowth with it. Okay? It's 8:45. Thank you so much, Diana. Good
Thank
talk.
Thank you.
This is the Bill Maier Show.
News is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online.
Portland riots have yet to materialize. Bill Lennon, KMED.
8:47. We had that big, deep conversation on the sustainable development and climate-friendly, equitable community, all right? Now we're going to bring you back to the America that we love, and that is the Diner 62 Real American Quiz, which we talk about history that happened in the real America that we love. Thank you very much, Diana, by the way. And we're going to start with caller number 8-770-563-377-OKMED. Remember, tomorrow is Clam Chowder Friday. All right, two pork chops and eggs, 8-ounce New York steak and eggs on special right now on the weekends. Half ham special for $11.15. There is so much to eat and enjoy at The Real American Place, Diner 62, just south of White City. Caller number 8 starts 770-5633. Good luck. We'll play that in a matter of seconds.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com. 770-KMED.
Yep, it's a full board right now for the Diner 62 Real American Quiz, and Calvin is up first. Hey, Calvin, how you doing?
Very, very good.
Great. Well, Calvin, it was November 8th, tomorrow in history, 1994. California voters approved Proposition 187. They banned illegal aliens from using the state's major public services. And I know it's hard to believe when you look at California now, but the proposition stopped the undocumented from accessing basic public services such as non-emergency health care, primary and secondary education, so no schools, also required public servants like medical professionals and teachers to monitor and report on the immigration status of those under their charge. A group of Republican activists and state legislators responding to the economic slump and the presence of over a million illegal aliens at that time decided to launch that campaign. What percentage of yes votes did Proposition 187 pass with, Calvin? Was it A, 51%, B, 55%, C, 59%, D, 63%, or was it E, 67%? What do you say?
I'll say 51.
You'll say 51%, just over 50%. No, it was more than that, more than 51. Let's see if Bob Kaufman can figure this one out. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
50,
my guess is 67.
67%. Was it 67% survey? No. Wasn't that either, Bob. So we're somewhere in between the extremes. We got Jack. Hey, Jack, 55, 59, or 63%?
Let's go with 59.
Let's go with 59. Good day for you, buddy.
You're a winner!
Yep, Jack, 59%. Wide margin of victory. In spite of that, the ballot measure never took effect. The passage was just kind of symbolic, short-lived for, victory for conservatives. Public support high from the start, but the threat of stopping over a million California residents from basic public services stirred up all sorts of opposition from the parasite class. That's my editorializing there. But 70,000 people marched against 187 in downtown L.A. 10,000 public school students walked out. Oh, speaking of parasite class, and that was just before the vote. And then within a week, a legal challenge stopped the new law from taking effect, and it was held up in the appeals process until the late 90s, and a Democrat governor ended up dropping the state's appeal. They're also thinking now, I think this is interesting, Jack, that Proposition 187 played a key role in galvanizing illegal alien rights activists and pushing Hispanic and Asians away from the California Republican Party. And that was kind of the end of the Republican Party at that point in California. But I guess you're just supposed to lay down and help the people take you over, I guess, was kind of the way they were looking at it back then. I don't know, Jack. Do you remember? Did you ever live in California at that time? Curious.
Not at all. But you know what? They didn't listen to the people.
Yeah, and they certainly fought. They were fighting even back then to allow the invasion to continue. And now look at California. I'll bet they wish they were a little more serious about it then. Why don't you hang on? We're going to get you set up, send you the Diner 62 quiz. We'll take a few calls here also to wrap up Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you have something on your mind, 770-563.
It's AUDIEN hearing.com. It's the Joe Pags Show.
They're lost souls. None of them have any clue what they're talking about, yet they'll keep on blindly following the person who's now being supported by Iran. Now, do I think Kamala Harris asked for their endorsement? No. But there's a reason why the enemy of the United States wants her, isn't there? Do I think she asked Putin for his support? Of course not. But there's a reason why he's throwing it her way, isn't there? That's kind of common sense, is it not?
The Joe Pags Show, evening 6 to 8 on KMED.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
I appreciate you being here. 8:56 and change. If you wanted to squeeze in a quick Conspiracy Theory Thursday call, that would be good. It's 770-5633. I only have about 3 minutes left here. So I wanted to touch on an email that I got from Pat in Eagle Point. Emails of the day are sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. We appreciate them. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant. While you wait, crowns can be available there. They have an in-house lab. Ask them about it. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. And Pat in Eagle Point writes about the planned city. Now, remember, we were talking about Diana Anderson's event tomorrow night in which she does these presentations and is exploring, you know, the rabbit holes. I mean, some people look at these as exploring rabbit holes, but the communism in the planning. Planning.org, all the rest of it. I know Mr. X popped me something, you know, about that just a moment ago, and he's even looking at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality as one of the origins of a lot of this, too. And I wouldn't disagree with you on that. I haven't had a chance to go through all the various links here, Ed. But Pat Eagle Point says, Bill, I remember a news segment a few years ago about a large high-rise apartment building in China where President Xi ordered all his people to be quarantined in those buildings because of COVID. He locked them inside and could not leave on their own accord. I could still hear them screaming from the buildings when a fire broke out to escape. It was horrifying. I fear that where we might be going with these climate-friendly, equitable communities and the stack-and-pack housing, where we are, especially in Oregon, they want us to be locked up, too. I'm not an expert, but I know there are listeners who can draw up measures for our next election to vote on the return to voting in person. I feel that's the only way we'll save our state and country. I'm willing to help if I can. Could be a tall lift, but nothing wrong with trying to lift it, Pat. I will give you on that. As far as the climate-friendly, equitable community, really what has to happen, and I'm going back to even something that Ed, Mr. X, and, of course, what Diana Anderson was talking about, you have to have that sense in your gut, that sense of outrage, and gather friends and family to rise up with your city councils, to make the body politic side of our city and county government aware that, no, we do not give consent. But if all we're going to do is go home and watch Fox News and News Nation and Newsmax and thinking that and with President Trump in power, that's going to fix us. It's not going to save us. The fight here has to be doubled down upon, all right? We don't consent, and we have to make sure that people know we don't consent. Got to say it, okay?
Southern Oregon's place to talk. KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, a bi-coastal media station.
It's 9 o'clock at KMED.